Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Cremery. City officials in Juneau have proposed a municipal spending plan for next year that slightly raises the property tax rate to balance out the costs of taking over closing school buildings and maintaining current city services. But as KTOO's Clarice Larson reports, the city-owned hospital will face some difficult decisions in the coming year.
On Saturday, the Juneau Assembly met for a day-long meeting to begin building the framework for next year's $440 million spending plan. The meeting was just the first of many before the budget will be finalized in June. This year, property values have gone up in Juneau, but not nearly as much as last year. Both residential and commercial property assessments rose by less than 2% on average. City Manager Katie Kester proposed a property tax rate for next year of 10.32%. A slight bump from last year. She says that an increase is needed to balance the cost of the city taking over the school buildings that will close under the school district's consolidation plan.
So we worked really hard to maintain assembly direction and have a flat mill rate, 10.16. We got a little gift late in the game with those three facilities, and that is the mill rate increase from 10.16 from 10.32. It really represents that.
Some assembly members, including Mayor Beth Weldon, said they'd still like to see the rate stay flat, but that could mean cutting some services or using savings.
I'm hoping between filling those buildings and some creative pencil sharpening of the assembly, we can bring that back down to 10.16.
Each year, the city budgets funds for things like schools, the city-owned hospital, the airport, Eagle Crest Ski Area, and docks and harbors. This year's budget essentially maintains the status quo. It isn't cutting or adding any major services. But the Assembly does face some looming problems. Bartlett Regional Hospital's proposed budget for this year projects a loss of $7.5 million in funds. That budget dips into the hospital's savings this year to cover the loss, but it can't sustain that for much longer. If the hospital can't cut costs enough, the hospital's CFO says it will essentially be out of money within the next 3 years. Bartlett Interim CEO Ian Warden says these decisions won't come easily for the Assembly or for the public.
We're in a very difficult position, and I think programmatic closure is not out of the realm of what most hospitals are doing at these days.
Assemblymember Alicia Huskandes says she thinks making those major decisions doesn't feel feasible during this budget cycle, but she thinks they will have to happen in the next year. Eagle Crest Ski Area is also facing a deficit heading into the budget process, more than $415,000, due to rising costs, the effects of climate change, and a tight job market. At the meeting, Eagle Crest manager Dave Scanlon said the ski area is seeking a five-year loan of nearly $900,000. He said that would address the deficit and help prepare for the summer season and the addition of a used gondola.
We need to build staffing capacity. It'll help cover some of this kind of bridge between where we're at right now and where we're going to get to as we open the gondola.
It's not clear yet whether the city will grant the loan, but it does plan to fund the Juneau School District as much as the state allows, as it has in years past. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
Many Alaskans have to travel a long way for certain healthcare treatments, but a bill in the State House aims to close that distance by expanding the list of providers Alaskans can see without having to leave home. KFSK's Shelby Herbert has more.
Emily Nenon is the Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society. She's been working to open up venues for telehealth for several years. Telehealth allows patients to meet with their healthcare providers online instead of in person.
I love talking about telehealth because there's so much potential. In our state, we're so uniquely situated to be able to take advantage of telehealth and really use it to deliver healthcare in an innovative way and oftentimes in places and to people for whom healthcare wouldn't be available maybe at all.
Nenon's organization celebrated a temporary policy win during the pandemic when the state government suspended a number of telehealth restrictions.
So pre-pandemic, in order to do a telehealth visit with a doctor in the state, a patient would have to do their first visit in person before they could continue to do visits by telehealth. For an example, if they need to see a specialist that's in Anchorage, they would have to fly in, see that specialist in person if you get further out than just a simple Fairbanks-Anchorage flight. you can imagine.
Before the pandemic, an Alaskan patient couldn't see a doctor out of state unless that doctor and all the specialists on their care team were licensed to practice in Alaska. But the state's emergency order lifted those rules because people across the state were having a hard time traveling to access care. Nenon says that was a game changer for patients and their physicians across Alaska.
There was a radiation oncologist in Anchorage that I talked to who, during the pandemic, had been able to do an initial education visit with a patient that was living in rural Alaska to decide whether they even wanted to go forward with that radiation therapy or not, and then get all the background in place so that when the patient did come into Anchorage, everything was already set up. They could get right to work. Saved that whole trip, saved time.
That grace period is over. The Alaska legislature set many of those telehealth provisions aside when the state's emergency order ended.
So now we have pre-pandemic, very limited access to telehealth. During the pandemic, lots of access to telehealth. All of a sudden, we go back to you can't get access to your telehealth.
The proposed legislation would let out-of-state healthcare providers on a care team provide remote services to a patient in Alaska. It would also allow Alaskans to seek out a few more types of services through telehealth if they aren't, quote-unquote, reasonably available in the state. That includes things like behavioral health, substance abuse treatment, physical therapy, and audiology. Phil Hofstetter is the CEO of Petersburg's Hospital. His first encounter with telemedicine was back in the late 90s and early aughts, when he was working in Nome as an audiologist. That's a healthcare specialist who works with ears and hearing. He was one of only a few audiology providers for Nome and all the surrounding villages. And he says it was a struggle to keep up with the demand for care.
And there'd be a waiting list sort of a mile long. I mean, sometimes 8 months long. A year later, I would go to the same community. I would see the same patient. They would have the same issue, and they weren't even seen. And I was at a point where I was like, this is terrible. I can't see patients this way.
Hofstetter says many of his patients were frustrated and about to give up on seeking treatment. But then, he says, former U.S. Senator Ted Stevens won his hospital a substantial amount of funding for a telehealth project. Keep in mind, this is all long before Zoom or even broadband existed. But Hofstetter says they created this system where he could complete in-person exams in remote villages and then send the results off to a physician who could prescribe treatments.
Everything was from the satellite if you had internet, and everything was very, very, very slow. So I was able to capture an image of the eardrum, and I could scan my results. It would, like an email, get sent to a surgeon in Anchorage. And they would consult on it, and we would have a turnaround time of 24 hours. All of a sudden, overnight, I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to change healthcare forever.
Despite his initial excitement, Hofstetter says telehealth isn't the no-brainer he thought it was a few decades back. He has a few concerns about quality control and the potential for fraud.
Now, you don't want to just have the ability to overbill. The other thing that we're concerned about is you want to make sure the quality of care that doesn't get overlooked, which will really tank the telehealth model in a lot of ways, is if there's people that are overbilling because they can respond to something in 5 minutes, but it's not an appropriate level of care.
A section of the proposed law does establish a list of grounds for disciplinary sanctions against out-of-state care team members who engage in fraud. Despite Hofstetter's reservations, and whether the bill passes or not, telemedicine is part of his vision for Petersburg's new hospital facility, which is currently in the works. One of the new buildings will have a section dedicated to telehealth services, where community members will be able to virtually check in with their providers who are based outside of Alaska. The bill is sponsored by Senator Matt Clayman and passed unanimously in the Alaska Senate in late March. It's currently awaiting approval in the State House. In Petersburg, I'm Shelby Herbert.
And here's a snippet from last night's main stage at the Alaska Folk Festival.
This is a man's world. This is a man's world. But it wouldn't be nothing, believe me, nothing but messy, nothing without a woman or a girl. You see, man made
That's the sound of Colette Costa with Costa's Poets, Thieves, and Liars. The festival resumes tonight at 6:30, live at Centennial Hall. You can listen on KRNN at 102.7 or 103.1, or go to ktoo.org, where you can watch our live video feed. This is KTOO.